Welcome to the Earth Keepers Podcast. This podcast is for people who seek new and better ways to love and care for the Earth. It's a podcast for anyone who is deeply concerned about the harm being done to the environment on a local and global level. It's a podcast that builds community and connection between people of like heart and mind, people who believe that Earth care should be integrated into every aspect of life, and for many in the Earth Keepers community, that includes our spiritual lives. Welcome, friends, to the Earth Keepers Podcast. Hey, Earth Keepers. On this podcast, we talk often about the importance of creative, out-of-the-box thinking when it comes to making a difference in promoting Earth care and fighting against climate change. In this episode, we'll meet a person who shows us what such innovative problem-solving can look like when it comes to educating young kids. Shauna Causey confronted a challenge that she faced in her own life: the need for formational, quality preschool education for her children, and designed a solution that also integrated her love of nature and her interest in ocean conservation. The innovative, environmentally focused preschool that she founded also became a way for her to help her friends, neighbors, and the entire community. Well, in this conversation, James and I are on site at the South Whidbey Preschool to hear Shauna's story of earthkeeping innovation. So, Shauna, welcome to the podcast. I hope you'll orient our listeners by telling us about the work you do here at Whidbey Preschool and some of the things you're invested in these days.
Yeah, well, sounds great. Thanks for having me on the podcast, and thanks for coming to visit to this location. So in 2019, I started a tech company that supports early childhood education, and it ended up as a brick and mortar school here on beautiful Whidbey Island, focused specifically on, at our core, environmentalism, learning about outdoors, and creating future stewards of the environment. And through that, learning about all kinds of other things that we all need to learn, like strong social emotional skills and friendships and art, all the fun things as well. But at the core, we are really focused on nature and a nature-based program and developing that love of nature. And for me, that's been really fun to bring this to life here on Whidbey Island and really think about this place as a special place. And on the side, over the last year, I've also taken a year-long course to study to be an orca whale researcher. And that was more just my version of, you know, during the pandemic, seemed like everybody was learning how to make bread or different things. And I didn't do anything except start this school. So that was my version of what do I want to do for fun? And it's really been fun to bring those elements into the school as well. And we think about the ocean and the ocean health.
And you've been at it for a couple of years, but are expanding. Yeah, we sit in the midst of a construction site at the moment, but the potential is super exciting. What are your hopes for the near future?
So we started with one classroom here on Whidbey Island, and then about 8 months ago launched our second, and then we're launching our third. It's slated to open next month, this space that we're sitting in right now, and then continuing to expand our outdoor classrooms as well. So there's a lot of potential here for early childhood education, camps, and in the future after school programs as well, all focused on learning more about nature and learning how to be good stewards of the planet.
We'll talk about your personal background in a little bit, but I'm really fascinated with actually something you just told us earlier on the tour, which is you're also teaching kids how to think in terms of entrepreneurship and innovation. And that feels like a really important core value and something that definitely sets the school apart from other schools. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, what are your hopes for the entrepreneurship stuff that you do?
That's actually a really great question, and one that I haven't really talked about or hasn't been asked, but my background is technology and entrepreneurship. So starting a preschool was really interesting for me to bring in known pedagogies that work, Montessori, Waldorf, really be inspired by those, but also think about what does the future need when we think about ourselves as well as the next generation. So one of the learning themes, this one lasts for a full month, and this is the current learning theme, is called Little Entrepreneurs. And it's the idea of instilling that idea of I can do something, I can start something, I can have a vision for what that looks like. So we lay out the tools and we have different activities for them to do. And they're able to really take it and make it their own and have that encouragement and understanding that they created it. And I think that's really special because it took for me into my late 30s, being at a venture capital firm, realizing that, oh, hey, I can start a company. Anybody can start a company. It's not just something somebody else can do. And wouldn't that be neat if we could teach kids at a younger age that that's possible and doable and they can do it. They can think about the future and they can help create what the future looks like.
We were, James and I, talking on the ferry boat over about a report that came out on the news recently about the United States going down on the happiness quotient from 17 to 35, but leading the way in unhappiness was young people. And just thinking about my own daughter's generation and her experiences, I know that a lot of her discontent is a feeling of being disempowered, like not actually able to make a difference. Seeing all these seemingly insurmountable problems, but not feeling like she has any power to influence that. Seems to me that in a way, what you're talking about is an antidote to that. So whether or not they start a business, if they think in terms of problem solving and the capacities to do that, that feels like essential empowerment on a fundamental level.
That's a great point. I mean, that's something that was instilled in me as a child, and it's been really impactful for me to think about that in my life and how can I encourage others to have that confidence and knowledge that they can.
And at such a young age, this has got to be so.
Mm-hmm. And you can see it. The great thing is when at this age, early child education, you're forming all of the elements that they're going to be able to use in elementary school and later in life. And sometimes as adults, we haven't learned some of these things that we're teaching in preschool. And it's really neat to be able to see the impact right away. You can see it. You can see their eyes light up. You can see them say, I did this, and they're proud of themselves. And verbalizing that in some of the ways that we sometimes lose as adults, but being able to see that's really an amazing outcome.
Shauna, you've referenced your previous work with venture capital firms and tech startups, and you're clearly at heart an innovator and an entrepreneur. I'm wondering, now that you're doing this kind of work, how have those experiences and that kind of world shaped you personally and what you do here at the school?
I started out my career working at Fortune 500 companies and kind of quickly realizing when people would get a cake for being there 20 years or 30 years, I realized I'm excited for them, but that's not what my path is going to be. So at every role, one of the things looking back, I always asked for more work and I always figured out how to kind of create my own job by stepping up and saying, I'd really like to do this. I've got everything else done. And that led to really finding a footing and a place in technology. And then that led to an organization called TechStars, a startup weekend TechStars, where you would get together and create an organization or a company in a weekend. So you'd have these problems, people would pitch problems, you'd form teams and you'd create something. And sometimes they would last after the weekend. And sometimes it was just creating those early seeds of entrepreneurship. And so I think a lot of that in helping other people, I realized more what I wanted to do and more where my heart was. And earlier in my career, I did work in the e-commerce world and retail and had a great career path that I was moving forward. But I really stepped off that career path because I realized that the idea of consumerism wasn't a good fit for where I wanted to go. And that was in my 20s. And I didn't really know what it looked like. I just knew that just buying more stuff in a different color, working for one of the major retail companies in the United States, just wasn't fulfilling for me, even though the role was a high profile role and I had a lot of accolades and media attached to it. It wasn't really fulfilling for me. So it's been quite a journey figuring out what that does look like and learning more about what my place is and how I can help.
I'm curious, as a follow up, having been deep in the tech world and now having a school that emphasizes outdoor time and getting off screens, what's that journey been like? And do you feel like technology and connection to nature can be linked, or are they always at odds with each other? How's your thinking developed on that?
My role is always, how can technology be a supplement, or for instance, a lot of the administrative work or the communication thinking about how we can automate almost everything on the back end. But then everything else is not automated. Everything else is personalized as much as possible when we think about education. And really, I think that's the ultimate goal. But a lot of times, I think what we are seeing is it is easy to think about screen time. It's easy to think about, oh, we'll do 30 minutes a day. No, now it's an hour or 2 hours, specifically thinking about kids at home. And so sometimes it can be at odds because when they come to school, we don't want them in front of a screen. We want them experiencing real life and being here, being present in the moment and their brain activated and learning about themselves and others. And so it can be at odds, but from more of an organizational or business perspective, I really see technology being the back end automation in service of a great experience in person.
I was also thinking about the ways in which you're encouraging creative thinking, entrepreneurial thinking among kids connected to their time outdoors and future problems that they're going to become increasingly aware of. I'm wondering, when you think about the problems that we are facing, particularly environmental problems, what are the entrepreneurial opportunities that you might see from your vantage point?
Well, I think the first one, which we talked about a little bit in the beginning, is just the idea of I can do something about this and I can make a difference, or I'm seeing something that I think should change. So I think that level of awareness and fortitude and confidence is one of the first elements, which I know even a lot of adults, they can kind of feel like you can't make a difference. I'm just one person. What can I do? So I think that idea. And then when we think about movements or as ideas take off, first, it only takes one person to start that. And then a lot of times other people will come on and agree. And it's the second person, when you think about the idea of movements, that normalizes it. And then you see a bunch of other people come in and think that that's a great idea. Let's do that. Why wasn't it done that way before? The other side too, if somebody creates something that is really detrimental to the environment and then it becomes the norm, right? It's very hard to change that. So I think to your question, getting to that level of awareness and understanding that something can be done, and then figuring out how to build community and build understanding about why it needs to happen. I think from an entrepreneurship perspective, it's never been a better time to think about being focused on the planet. When we think about even some of the emerging technology with AI and what's possible, it's really, really an exciting time to think about. And with technology and automation now, you don't have to have a coding degree. You don't have to be a data scientist to do a lot of this, because a lot of that type of work is also being automated so that it's easy to do it even from your kitchen table. You can create a company nowadays. And so it's getting easier and easier. And that's just accelerating. So it's really exciting to think about.
I think in some ways, your attitude in your description is an answer to James's question, in the sense that I think what entrepreneurs bring to the table is the sense like there's always something we can do, right? We have to find ways to solve this. And that means we think out of the box. We think in terms of alternative design. It's a very responsive approach. Being able to discern the need and respond to it, maybe in experimental ways, but respond is the only option.
Yeah.
Passivity is not an option for entrepreneurs. So I really love that.
That makes me think of entrepreneurs as a source of hope for people. I think of the strong entrepreneurs I know, the harder the challenge, the more motivated they are. Like, we have got to do this. Yeah. And we need them to help lead the way on some of these really thorny, difficult issues.
That's a great point. I know for me, one thing I've learned about myself is if someone tells me that I can't do it or it's a crazy idea and it's something that I do feel compelled to do, that will give me 100 times motivation. Oh, you don't think it's possible? We can definitely do this. Let's do it.
You've just given me the green light.
Right? Yeah. That means that is the green light. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thinking about your personal mission really to help the kids here at the school maybe form greater connection to place, to environment, and maybe a greater sensibility in terms of creation care, I'm wondering where that comes from in you. When you think about your relationship to nature, to creation, how would you describe that? And how was that really formed from your early days?
Well, first, I should mention that my passion is really supporting others. So the teachers here are the ones that make everything possible. They are absolute superheroes, and we have an incredible team. But thinking about, starting the school and the core mission and sort of the early seeds of it, for me, I remember the first time I traveled to Joshua Tree National Park and just that sense of awe and wonder. And then I was very inspired learning about the story behind Joshua Tree, which is this one woman from Pasadena was traveling there in the early 1900s and saw that they were essentially decimating the desert, where it looks like nothing's alive but the Joshua trees and the cacti and everything. They were just burning it and treating it like garbage. And she single-handedly spearheaded an effort to talk with the president and get some of that land set aside. And I'm so inspired by that. She wasn't some professional. She didn't have a background in doing that, but she felt so compelled to do that. And now we get to enjoy that amazing park and see it. And it's one of my favorite places on earth. And then visiting Yosemite. I don't know if you've been to Yosemite before, and just seeing the giant grove of sequoias and these trees that have been around for thousands of years, and just really that sense of awe and wonder in our natural world as it can be somewhat untouched. And that for me is incredibly inspiring, thinking about not us as dominating nature, which we often do, but us as respecting and revering it as it exists already, and how we can make sure to set more land aside, more of that aside for future generations.
I'm wondering, what are some of the things that you do to connect personally with nature?
Well, I go on hikes. There's one, Evie's Landing, which is an incredible hike here on Whidbey Island. Across the world, that's probably my favorite hike anywhere in the world. I love it so much. It's got the bluffs and the ocean. Sometimes you can see whales. It's kind of got everything on the beach. So that's one of my favorite. I think also just figuring out new ways of integrating it into the school is always inspiring to me. And then seeing it come to life with the teachers and doing brainstorm sessions with the teachers on how we can continue our mission and our learning themes is always inspiring to me. And oftentimes that's when I do more research on whether it's trees or different ecosystems. Every kiddo who's here at the school got their own tree that they're taking care of throughout the year and will bring home at the end of the summer. And so I'd done a lot more research on trees than I ever had before, just thinking about that. And yeah, so it's definitely been delving into a different world for me, being so focused on technology in my past.
So the kids are getting to take care of trees, are doing some gardening. You do at the beaches close by, so you get to spend time there. So lots of exposure to the outdoors and to nature. I'm wondering, in the couple of years you've been at this so far, what are some of the transformations in the kids that you've seen? What are some of the signs or stories, really, of those changes that you hope towards?
This is such a simple one and such an easy one, but a lot of people are scared of spiders. I mean, some adults, I used to be. And when you learn about them, they're actually fascinating and amazing and beautiful and so neat. And their place in the ecosystem is really neat too, thinking about eating the other bugs. And so one that happens immediately that's really fun to see is sometimes kiddos come in and they're scared of spiders. And then we learn about them. It's almost similar to monsters or something. Like, it's very scary. It's unknown. But when you know it, you can think of it in a different way. And so I think that that's a fun one, mainly because it happens in one day. Oftentimes, it's such a quick one. But other ones, really thinking about being kind to the environment, whether it's just our space or spaces at home. We talk a lot about the trees and the ecosystem with the trees. We have some apple trees that we pick and harvest in the summertime here in the garden. And so they know that we don't want to tear out all the branches of the apple tree because we're going to have apples, and they talk about that. And it's one of the really special times in the summertime. And so I think just hearing them learn about animals and about seeing gardening happening, seeing their trees grow, has been really neat. And I think just to mention too, we are still in the early stages. We've been around for a couple of years, but we're still kind of honing in on how we can bring that to life, which has been a fun process too.
It seems to me that on the one hand, there's an emphasis on knowing, right? But it seems to me that it's knowing to a particular end. It's knowing in order to love, in order to relate, in order to care. Yeah, would you say that that's a dynamic that you see happening?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And the great thing about is in that you can learn empathy. You can learn some of those social emotional skills that are really, we all know based on research, are core to not only elementary school, middle school, high school, but as an adult, that idea of care and love. And that's really core to all of this.
So your students have learned to care for spiders and you have learned a lot about orcas.
Yeah.
So I just find it so interesting that you took time out of your busy life to take a one-year course in learning about that. What was that like? What did you learn and what motivated you to do it?
One of the areas that's really stood out to me when I think about the environment, always growing up next to the ocean. So I grew up near Alki Beach and I've always been within a block or two living next to the ocean. So it's always been part of my life down there as a kid and as an adult and with my own kids and just curiosity to learn more. But one of the areas that was really compelling to me was thinking about what we can see. We can see what's happening on land. We can see how we're caring or not caring for the land, but we can't see what's happening under the ocean. And it's really scary to me to think about the impact that we're having and what we don't really know about the impact. So I really wanted to learn more about that. And I thought in the future, I'd like to do more in that area, but right now I want to learn more about it. And so I thought about all the different ways I could do that. When you think about starting a tech company, usually what you want to do is get in at the ground level and learn as much as you can and talk to as many people as you can. So my version of that was, let me, as well as just learning about it and thinking about it for the school, but how can I learn more about the apex predator, the top of the food chain, and one of the most beautiful creatures that here with the southern residents especially, we don't know how long they're going to be around. There's not that many reproductive females and we can see immediately what's happening with the lack of food and only being in the 70s and declining. So that made me think about it. And then this great program that exists in Anacortes that was a partnership between the Orca Behavior Institute and the Salish Sea School. And I really have had a lot of respect for both of those groups. So they had this program and I thought, there's no way I have to figure out how to make time for this. There's no way I can pass this up. And what a great opportunity to just learn more. And it was very eye-opening. It's really neat to learn about the orcas. They have their own culture, just like people do. They have their own family units. They stick with their families. Depending on which group you're looking at, the southern residents or the transients, there's different cultures within both and different ways that that comes to life for them. And then there was a lot of boat trips and observations from a distance, looking at their behavior and what's happening. And recently with a calf being born and then unfortunately passing away and just seeing so much of life. One of the things that was fascinating is there are so many different similarities between people and orcas and their brains are actually bigger. And I think that learning about them, they're even smarter than humans in different ways, as I've learned, not in the same way as us, but it's just been so fascinating to learn more about that.
So you've literally learned a lot in your year of study. Did you, after finishing or halfway through, did you feel like you were different? Like the experience of being out there and observing this to change you?
Yeah, I think it just like what we've talked about earlier in the podcast, it gave me a level of empathy for getting to know these family units on a more personal level, observing them over time, seeing them again and again, seeing them with their family units, seeing their environment and how their environment's changed and the fact that they don't have control over that. Yeah, I think from an empathy perspective and also thinking about being even more motivated to figure out what are the areas that we can continue to help the ocean and the ocean health.
Last season, we interviewed Joe Olson, president of the American Cetacean Society in the area. And his profession, his whole life was dedicated to designing hydrophones.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And one of his main motives for doing that work is what you had said earlier, that there is this other world under the water that no one knows about. Because we don't see it. We're not really aware of the beings of the ecosystems that are there, as opposed to what we can see. And so his rationale in creating hydrophones is to open that world up to people, help them to understand that there are other systems of being and whole cultures, he would say the same thing about whale culture. So you might be a good person to
I can't wait to listen to that.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about our own work, Forrest and I, our work with Circlewood, as in many ways an entrepreneurial activity. We saw a problem that people of faith were not engaged in environmental issues and had no theological framework for that, or very little, and were often suspicious of the environmental movement. Lots of obstacles to that. And in some ways, Circlewood is an attempt to solve that problem and make deep systemic change and be part of the greater public work around environmental care. That's deeply rooted as part of our understanding of faith. Have you seen ways in which your work is connected to your faith? And have there been any challenges to that that you've experienced?
Oh, what a great question. When I think about the core for starting this school and the idea of creating future stewards of the planet, I guess I feel a sense of happiness in that, especially in moments when, like, I took that trek just last summer. I went back to Yosemite and walked through the giant grove of sequoias. And for me, that felt like being at church. That felt like those moments where you're standing around singing something, you're in community together, and that level of love and support and peace as well, which I think is often missing in our society, that sense of peace. So I feel like it is connected. Under the hood, it's very connected. But oftentimes, which I think is one of the great reasons you have this podcast, is a lot of times we don't talk about these things. But for me, they are very similar, if not the same feeling, the same experience. And I wish there was more places like that that existed. And I think an open question is, how can we make sure that they are around for future generations and that we still have those experiences? Because when we think about this creation and this planet and really how special it is and how everything works together in a way that we can't always see with our eyes, but we can experience it. And oftentimes we take it for granted. And we interpret things, maybe not to get too technical, but I think sometimes we interpret things as if we are supposed to completely dominate what's happening, and to a level where it changes the ecosystem. And I think about it a little bit differently as I think about love and support. And I think we could get into the meanings of different words, but at the higher level, that's really how I think about it. It is all intertwined, and how special and how amazing that we can experience this.
Well, in this particular season of the podcast, we're focused on a question: how can we green our vocations? In other words, how can we make our work such that it serves the greater good of creation? I'm wondering, how have you personally struggled with that question, or at least some version of the question, making sure that your work has everything to do with the betterment of creation?
Well, a lot of times business and profit is at odds with that. And that creates a massive problem that we as individuals can make a difference on and need to continue to do that. So getting all the way down to the ground level, one of the things we're trying to do here at the school is go plastic free. It's very, very hard to do. So sometimes I will even send notes to some of the places where we buy things or the suppliers and just let them know. That's been an interesting journey for me. We think about everything that we can have is reusable. A lot of times we will, as you saw when we did the tour, we will reuse a lot of items. We do a lot with the ecosystem of things. So there's a movement called Buy Nothing, where if you're not using something, sometimes things are brand new, and we've given things and received things from the community, which has been great. So we are really thinking about it full stack, from everything that we use all the way up through how our learning lessons come to life here at the school. And then I've also done that in my personal life. One interesting example is this last year, instead of cutting down a tree, and we got a smaller tree. Yeah, for Christmas. Sorry, it was a Christmas tree that had a root ball. Built this wooden structure around it. And then a really neat tradition that we started with the kids was going to plant that in our yard afterwards so we could have that. And that was just thinking about that and then thinking about sharing that with others. Maybe some other people would be interested in doing that too. And I did share it out and some people thought that was a good idea. I mean, it's not as easy because the tree was a little heavy. I think it's really looking at our footprint and our impacts across the board and what are some of the easy ways we can make a difference and encourage that. And sometimes it also comes down to how can we encourage that at a legislative or a government level too, which we can make a difference with that if we step up and ask for that. People don't think it's possible, but it definitely is. The people that represent us in government are there to represent us. So if they hear from things that we want, we're able to make change that way.
What I hear in some of the example activities you're sharing about is that while you are a preschool that's oriented around values of creation care, you wouldn't have to be that to do any of the things that you just said. To try to go plastic free, any preschool anywhere could make similar kinds of commitments and endeavors. And it's a matter of starting somewhere, right? Choosing something that's doable, and they might have to learn into it, but still it's making some effort, some action. I mean, our premise for that question about greening all vocations is that all vocations are greenable. We haven't run up against the limits of that yet, but I'm wondering, do you agree with that? That really any job can be made greener?
Well, the only areas where I might question that is when we look at like coal and oil and some of these industries that are completely built on and have such long histories in what they've done to the environment. But the energy industry, yes, right? So when you're talking about industries, absolutely.
I'm taking that as a challenge, like, I'm going to find a coal miner. Finding a way to go green. Like, there's got to be a way. We'll see. Stay tuned on that one.
Well, I will say that I just love your energy around problem solving and the can-do spirit and what you've created here. And I hope that's inspiring to our listeners. I also know that starting things is hard and change comes slow. And there may be days for you, like there are for me, that hope seems in short supply. What do you do to maintain hope personally and professionally?
One of the places that I get my hope and inspiration is when I'm having a hard day, if I can go help somebody else, or if I can jump into the classroom for a little while and support the teachers, I forget about what I was ruminating on or thinking about. And I can put that in perspective and see that almost immediately, see the good and see the outcomes of why this work, this hard work and these hard days is worth it. I also think about just getting into nature is always a big one for me too. Just finding a place nearby, go for a hike or go to the beach. Those are really two of the ways that I've found to combat those tough days. I feel like it's almost impossible to start something, especially something that you want to scale. At least it feels that way on certain days, but holding out hope is so important and exciting as well. How would you answer that? I would love to hear how both of you would answer that question.
Well, I will say one of the answers I give to that question is my work with Circlewood gets to introduce me to people like you. There are so many people doing creative work around the environmental sphere. And a lot of those folks are working under the radar. They're good news stories, but they may not make the news. But it's people working hard day in and day out to do the kind of work that you're doing to shift mindsets, invest in the next generation, think long term. When I think about that on the days where I might be working alone and feel a little bit alone, I'm reminded, no, there's a great community of us who care enough to try something different and try to make change.
I think for me, it involves focus and focusing on the right things. I watched the news yesterday and the report that's out that the ocean is warmer than it ever has been and getting warmer. And scientists have put out what they call a red alert, right? I immediately get overwhelmed by that. But I find that if I can pull myself back from feeling complete responsibility for changing that, I try to focus on what I can do, which is talking to people about things like this and doing the work in my sphere of teaching. I think that's really where I can maintain. It's just doing what I know is before me to do without always having in mind the greater crisis that Benedict is in.
We've been in conversation with Shauna Causey, founder of the South Whidbey Preschool. To learn more about Shauna, the school, and about entrepreneurial thinking in general, go to the show notes for this episode at earthkeepers.online. The Earthkeepers podcast is an expression of Circlewood, an organization committed to cultivating a more ecologically conscious faith. For more information about the podcast or to learn about the ways you can support this work, go to our website at earthkeepers.online. You can contact us by leaving a voicemail through the podcast website or by emailing us at earthkeepers@circlewood.online. I am Forrest Dinsley, your podcast host. James Amidon is our executive producer. Our content editor and researcher is Colleen Meggerly, and our sound engineer is Dave Wolfers. Jesselyn Gentry is our social media director, and Forrest Reed is the composer of our original music. Thank you for listening, friends, and please join us for our next conversation on the Earthkeepers podcast.